So let's get going here. So who am I? What do I get to do for a living? As Katie mentioned, my name is Jeremiah Grossman. I am the founder and CTO of White Hat Security. My day job at White Hat is R&D and industry evangelism. Essentially what White Hat does is we assess websites for vulnerabilities. And in the other half of the time, we're always researching new attack techniques, defense techniques, and things like that. And I've written quite a bit, blogged quite a bit, and fortunate enough to get all kinds of cool awards. When you break down web security comes in two halves. There's the security of the website, and what you want to happen is for a hostile client, a browser, not to be able to hack a website. That's what you really ideally want to do, and that's where White Hat Security focuses. The other half of web security is the security of the browser. And again, ideally what you want to happen is for a malicious website not to be able to compromise a browser to whatever extent. And what's interesting enough, of my last decade in web security, well, the company I founded specializes in White Hat security. My personal specialty is browser security, you know, ironically enough. So that's where we're going to focus today, and because there's a whole lot of really cool attacks and design flaws that are resident in just about every single browser. No, I'll say every web browser out there. And I notice that a lot of people heads down working on their computers, and I guarantee you everybody that has a laptop open has a browser open. So guess what? This talk is relevant to you. This, you know, the web is a really big place, and there's 1.67 billion people on it, give or take, and they're accessing more than 220 million websites, and that number is growing by a million or two a month. So web security, while a subset of overall application security, is large enough for me, and it's a tremendously large problem. As we're accessing the cloud, you're probably doing so via the browser. If you're accessing Facebook, it's probably via a browser, but to a smaller extent, mobile phones. We're going to take a, more of an attacker's eye view of how we're going to look at browser security. What I like to target, and what I like to target is also what the bad guys like to target. Things with the largest market share, exploiting features that are enabled by default, and bonus points for design flaws because they're lesser in numbers, really cool to find, and they're extremely difficult to fix because they're all resident since a lot of times since the web began. So let's look at the browser market, and I pulled these numbers off this morning off net market share. And if you look at the browser landscape here, about 29% are running MSIE 8, 17% are running Firefox 3.6. You add another 3% for Firefox 3.5, so about 20% collectively. And then you've got, if you combine IE 6 and 7, you get about 25%. So if you count IE 6 and 7 together, that's the second most popular browser out there. Imagine 25% of people, 1 in 4 people, you know, or at least let's say, you know, that's a lot of people. And IE 6, I mean, they're not even using tabbed browsing yet. You know, it's kind of odd to think about. But so if you look down the range, those are the browsers that we're going to focus on, the different versions of IE, Chrome, Firefox, and Safari. But, you know, market share figures is one number, but these are actually people running behind these browsers, people that do banking online, that have real names and real lives and things like that. And so these are the raw numbers. So like IE8, you know, you touch nearly half a billion people. IE6, still a quarter of a billion people. Even down so much as Safari 4 and 5, it's 41 million people. So it's quite a big landscape when you're looking at browser security issues that are unpatchable, that it's really difficult to fix without, quote unquote, breaking the web. And there has been a lot of research into browsers, browser security over the years, and lots of advancements. We have some browsers have sandboxes, there's a lot better code security, there's memory protections, blacklists, there's green URL bars, anti-phishing, SSL warnings, but it all really comes down to, you know, the little lock symbols and the green things that give people a sense that everything is okay when it's really anything but. You've all seen these warning messages, right? And they all give you a sense that, well, I'm on a secure website, so I must be safe. No, not the case. Give you a few more warning messages because users are littered with these particular things to increase their sense of well-being. One other thing I wanted to mention, because this is a long-standing issue. This is another classic design flaw. Many of you might be familiar with it. This is the quote-unquote CSS history hack, where you put a big list of links on the screen, and using a little bit of JavaScript or even cascading style sheets, you can actually tell if a user's been to that link or not by the color of the link. If it's blue, they haven't been there. If it's purple, that they have. And this is a decade-old bug. Fortunately, quite recently, it seems to be on its way out. Firefox 3.7 Nightly, and it's going to go into Firefox 4, it's going to fix this issue by simply breaking the feature. Same with Safari 5. It's already out. You can't do this hack as reliably as before in Safari 5, and same with Chrome 6. This is broken. This is the one where you can tell where a user has been, what web bank they use, social network they use, where they do their webmail. Lots and lots of really interesting data can be gleaned about you using this particular hack. And I've been lobbying Microsoft to actually, at least asking the question, is this going to be in IE9? I think it should be, at least, if nothing else, not only to protect the users, but to keep up with everybody else. So if that's going away, if you're a bad guy, you still want to know perhaps where they are logged in. That is still, you can do that across all browsers right now. Just a little cross-site request forgery, and you can tell if a user is logged in using nothing more than a timing-based attack. If the timing is one set of numbers coming back, say 100 milliseconds, you know they're probably logged in. If it's 10 milliseconds, they're probably not. We're not going to talk much about this, but this is still possible in every single browser. You can tell if they're logging into their web bank, Yahoo Mail, or whatever the case may be. But this will bring us to the point where my last research in the last year. What I wanted to know is, I want to know your name, who you work for, where you live, your email address, and every personal detail that I can glean right at the moment you visit a web page that I control, even if you've never been there before, let alone enter any information on any website at any time. This is what we're going for. So we could ask Google, we could ask Facebook, but we better just ask the browser because that's the most easiest thing to do. There has been research in these areas, and I'm not going to begin to pronounce these particular names, but there are projects that do this to de-anonymize users to find out who they are by behavior patterns and things like that, or different memory statistics. My slides look a little off. Robert Hansen, who's going to be speaking a little on later in the day, he has done some research on decloaking users. So these are other ways to de-anonymize users, but still very sophisticated, and we're going to go well beyond this stuff. And the first thing we're going to talk about is, you know, the demos I'm going to show you affect, I'm going to cover just about every single browser out there. But the first one we're going to target and talk about today is Safari. There is a feature in Safari, and there's probably not too many Safari users here, but also imagine for a moment that there is 41, 50 million people who are, so even if the victims aren't in this room, they are elsewhere. You are not necessarily the victims of the bad guys' attacks, other people are. There is a feature in Safari. It says autofill web forms use information from my address book card. This works in combination with this code below. This is how you build just a standard web form. The important bits are the name of the attribute name. Name equals name, name equals company, name equals city, and so on and so forth. What happens is, from the GUI's perspective, it will try to autocomplete these fields using the me card in your address book, and that feature is on by default. So here's the behavior. When you go to a website, and this is the one on the right, if the input type name equals name is there, I type in a J because J is the first letter of my name, it'll pull out and it'll autocomplete my first name in the address field for me by pulling the data out of the me card in the address book. This works on both Windows and Mac if you're a Safari user. Does this make sense so far? So that's the thing. You only have to press the first character of your name. So that's the behavior. We know it's on by default. Bonus points there. Autofill, because before going on to the next step here, you've got to imagine what autofill is. Autofill has all the information that a bad guy could ever want. For identity theft, there's credit card numbers, first names, last names, passwords, phone numbers, your aliases, everything. So this is why it's so important. So once you hit the J, the rest gets filled out for you. The very unsophisticated trick is this. I simulate keystroke events in JavaScript. So you come to the web page, and I make a form that says name equals name, and I type in JavaScript space, I send a text event for A all the way up to Z, and I rotate it. So I dynamically create input fields, cycle through the alphabet, initiating text events until the form populates. When it populates, I pull the data out, and I steal it, and I send it off domain. And it happens really, really quickly, and I'd like to show you a demo of how this works. Let's see, which way is it? All right, so full screen that. Does that look big enough? All right, so at the time I recorded this, this was the latest version of Safari, Safari 5. It was on by default. After the demo runs, I'll explain to you the rather interesting Apple disclosure process. So this is the code that's running. This is just a demonstration. Notice it's on victim web server. I'm just double-clicking into the fields, and it's auto-populating the auto-completes with my me card. This is on hacker.com. Now it's simulating keystroke events. You know, I hit the start button, but it can easily be started right when I get to the web page. And it's just cycling through all these keystroke events until it notices it auto-completed and then pulls out the data. The only reason this is visible is for demonstration purposes. If you actually were to deploy this in the wild, there's no reason why it would be visible and you'd ever see it. Nope. Right when you hit the website, the code starts running. You can make the fields transparent. It runs. You probably, I slowed it down so it could actually be seen in this format. To run through all those fields probably would take 3 to 5 seconds, depending. So really fast, really easy. So it was interesting, so I disclosed this particular issue to Apple about 3 months out from Black Hat, and I got an auto response, and that was it. Emailed them again, didn't hear back. And as a week out or so from Black Hat, I got contacted by a reporter asking me what I was going to talk about at Black Hat. I told them, and this particular hack made the New York Times, because obviously privacy is a big deal to a lot of people. Being able to go right to a website and you can pull out their name and their address and where exactly they live was quite interesting to them. And Apple, I guess to their credit, patched the issue just before I went on stage at Black Hat. There's more to the story, but I'll get to that. So that's Safari. What about stealing other autofill information other than, well, just the stuff that's in the me card? Data that was perhaps previously entered. You know, you type in search terms and all sorts of things into input fields, and your browser will remember it. So again, we're targeting mass user share. So for this particular hack, we're going to target IE 6 and 7. IE 8 is not vulnerable to this. So IE 6 and 7. To my knowledge, this is not fixed, but I'm welcome to be corrected if I'm wrong. This is not patched. So autocomplete. So another thing to mention, very important, that this, there's a gotcha here, but this feature is not enabled by default. It has to be turned on. So autocomplete, when a user fills out a form, let's say name equals email, on, let's say on site A. You're on site A, name equals email in the input field. If site B, C, or D uses name equals email also, anything you entered will be keyed off that and be available to those other websites. So that data is shared across websites keyed by the input type name. So that's the behavior, that's what we're going for. This default, I'll get to in a moment, but it's not on by default. I can't stress that enough. Let's go back here. Now, to make the dropdown come down, there's two ways to do it. One, you can double click, or two, you can click in the field, add focus, hit the down arrow it again to select one, and hit enter. So I dub this the down down enter hack. So you set up all the fields you want. What I did to research this hack, I went to all the major websites and got all the important field names from all the particular websites, about 50 in total. And I put them in a big list. And what I did was I cycled through adding those to the DOM really quickly and doing a down, down, enter on all the fields in all those particular things. So it's, again, just keystroke simulation. But instead of A through Z, it's down, down, enter. So it ends up being a lot faster, a lot more efficient, and gets more data. So I'll show you how this one works. So let me move this one out of the way. So you don't need that one anymore. Oh, it's in full screen mode. Great. All right. IE7, latest patch, at least at the time. So hit play. So I'm going to show that where the option is. It's in, Internet Options, Content Settings, and it's been turned on here. Once again, not on by default, but there is a gotcha. So different fields with different names. I'm just hitting down. I'm clicking into the field and just hitting down with my keypad. Different fields have different values, so I've pre-populated them. I'm going to go to a local web server. This, remember, this is any website I control. Hit it, and that's how fast it goes. Really quickly to pull all my autocomplete information out. Again, the only reason it's really visible is because I allow it to be visible, and it can go much faster than that if you make it so.
Question.
Yes?
Can you steal password using this technique?
Don't get ahead of ourselves. Don't get ahead of ourselves. We'll get to passwords in a second. All right, so that's IE 6 and 7. Which 25% of the web, I think I said. So with this, you can get search terms, credit card numbers, and CCVs. You can get people's aliases because they use different email addresses, different usernames. You can get their contact information, answers to secret questions, usernames, and email addresses. Now, I kept mentioning not on by default. However, when you start entering information like an email address into a field, IE 6 and 7 will ask you if you want to turn autocomplete on. And this is a persistent request, meaning you only get it once and it goes away forever. Default is yes. So while the feature is not enabled by default, I would imagine a lot of people out there would have this on after they filled out one particular form, because nowhere else does this ever pop up and ask you if you want to do it again. So that's the gotcha there. All right, so I targeted Firefox. Firefox apparently had this issue fixed a long, long time ago. But just because we can't read data from Firefox doesn't mean we can't write to it. So you're able to spam the autocomplete field to the tune of 200 bytes per field, and you can do, I think, 100 fields at a time. So you can literally spam and inundate all the autocomplete information, just being generally an annoying bad guy on the web. So you can spoof stuff, spam stuff. I was doing crazy things with ASCII art in there. But it is there. You can also do, Safari and Chrome are also vulnerable to this to a limited extent. All right. Now, depending on your browser, depending on if you caught by one of these, what we now have here, bad guys, we have your email address. Your email address online these days is synonymous with your username. So your username will be valid on Google, Twitter, Craigslist, Netflix, eBay. Is there anything that doesn't require an email address as your username anymore? So that's your username that we have now gleaned with autocomplete. Let's talk about passwords. Most browsers, I would say, hazard to say all modern browsers, have the ability to remember your password. As security professionals or web security professionals, our guidance is choose a really hard password, something that's hard to guess, and make it different on every single website you go to, right? That's the guidance. So what's a user to do? They say, okay, I'm going to remember my password in my browser. So they're incentivized by our guidance to actually use password memory across all their websites, and a lot of experts and also users do this. So the way this behavior works, the way it's supposed to work is once you log in, you put in your email address and your password, it pops down one of these little highlights here. This is screens from Firefox and Chrome. So you say remember it, yes, or save password, yes, and then it saves. So whenever you come back to this form again, it'll auto-populate for you, so you don't have to remember your password, and you just hit log in. What they don't tell you is that this stuff is vulnerable to things called cross-site scripting. You guys might have heard of this one, right? So cross-site scripting, for those that are not already well aware, cross-site scripting is by far the number one most prevalent vulnerability across the web. And when you get cross-site scripted, you get cross-site scripted in the target domain. Meaning, let's say one of those particular websites, who should we be? Let's go back. Who should be a victim today? Twitter. Twitter has a lot of cross-site scripting vulns these days. So let's say you have remembered your password on Twitter. You've clicked a link and you've now been cross-site scripted on Twitter. The cross-site scripting payload at this point can now set up a fake login screen that will, and now your browser will auto-populate the login and be able to pull and rip your passwords straight out of the browser. Let me show you how this works. We haven't picked on Chrome, right? Pick on Firefox? Let's pick on Firefox. All right, Firefox 3.6. The most vulnerable to this particular bug is Firefox and Chrome. Safari and IE are vulnerable, but to a much more limited extent for a variety of reasons. So we're on victim's website. We're going to type in our email address. Mine. And a login. And then it asks me, right? You know, hit remember. And now it's in the browser, saved on a per domain basis. Let's pause this here, shall we? Standard cross-site scripting payload, right? You know, script tag on the in the input parameter. Right when you send this, you tiny URL it, send it to somebody on Twitter or whatever else. They click on it, loads in their browser, pulls in more code from an off-domain location. Now, this code has already been running. This is a fake login screen on victim. Right, that has been automatically generated by my cross-site scripting payload. Right when you hit enter, it'll run. So you enter, my password auto-populates, and my username and password has been pulled out of the browser using just a little cross-site scripting bug. So yet another reason to fix cross-site scripting. Do it for your users. Any questions so far? All right, well, let's just says we have a little bit of time. Let's show how we can do it on Chrome, too. So Chrome, latest Chrome is 6.0, because they seem to rev up by major version number every week. Because they want to catch up to you guys. I give them by November. All right, so I put in my username and password, save password. Same exact hack as before, cross-browser compatible cross-site scripting payload. Hit enter, runs the code, fake login form, and bang, pulls it out. Really simple to do. And again, the only reason it's visible, because we make it visible. There's no reason that that login field has to be visible to the user. Auto, if it, your password has been stolen this way, chances are you would never know it. Now, for the Firefox users in the room, there is a in the about config, there is a non-surfaced config called sign-on autofill forms that is off by default, which is kind of like the crux of my presentation here, that the browsers have many different really nice security features that are off by default and never get turned on. This is one. If you're a Firefox user, turn this on, and your passwords will not auto-populate without you clicking something to make them populate, so it makes you a bit more resilient to a cross-site scripting hack that steals your passwords anyway. There is a long-term problem in this one, and something I haven't discussed. How would a bad guy deploy these kind of payloads to a mass audience? I recommend advertising networks. You can spend $100 and get 100,000 impressions for just about any kind of crazy code that you want, and you can send this out there and pull a whole bunch of people's you know, first names, last names, email addresses, and things like that. But as we know from for tracking purposes, let's say I got somebody's first name, last name, email address, and I'm doing this off of whoisthisperson.com, and I give them a cookie in return. Now, what if, now, I've done this, and, you know, this issue has been out there for quite some time now, since IE6, and I cookie all these users. Now, let's say all these bugs are now fixed, magically, and I'm a website owner, and let's say website.com, whatever that website might want to be, when a user comes to my page, I would like very much to know who exactly they are and what their name is. How would I go about doing that? Well, if I'm a bad guy who has pre-populated a database with cookies littered all over the web, I can just ask them using a web page widget. I do a script source equals to some who is this person or iknowyourname.com, and it comes back as a JSON object to tell them, because now your browser has been cookied. That makes sense? Tracking cookies now using browser hacks. So, which brings up another interesting question. Should a user delete their cookies? Well, there's many reasons for users to delete their cookies, but this is the user way to delete cookies, at least in Firefox, and every browser, almost every browser, has a way of doing this. You go in, view the cookies, and you just hit remove cookies, and you delete them all. That's the preferred user way to do it. But users are not going to do this. You know, there's things like EverCookie out there that, you know, will repopulate cookies and things like that. So I figured I'd find a hacker's way of doing it. How do I delete all a user's cookies for them? All right, that seems fair. Every browser seems to have a global cookie cap. I have not done extensive testing on the different IE versions, so I can't say whether or not they are vulnerable to this one. But I'm most familiar with Firefox, Safari, and Chrome. They have a global cookie cap, or at least Firefox has a global cookie cap of 3,000, 3,200 if it's Safari or Chrome. That is, you can, once you hit the global cookie cap, what happens is if anybody adds another cookie to the pile, the older one, or I think it's the oldest one, drops off the list. So you can't go over 3,000. The older ones get pushed out of the system. So if you want, if you're a bad guy, if you want to hit the global cookie cap, you need one domain name, 60 subdomains, and 50 cookies per subdomain. And you can do that really quickly using this particular code here. You just do a bunch of image tags pointing to different host names that will add 50 cookies per domain name, and you get equivalent of a cookie eviction. Let me show you how this works. Let's go back, go pick on Chrome. All right, show all my cookies. Don't have any. Now I'm going to reset, reload a bunch of news websites that have cookies, so my browser gets pre-populated with a whole bunch of cookies, and we'll have a look at those. New York Times, Threat Post, Dark Reading, things that I tend to read. I don't read the Wall Street Journal. And we're also going to log into Facebook. Make sure we get a session cookie for Facebook. Great, now we're logged in. Now, let's say you, after at some point, now we'll show all the cookies. I went to 5 websites, but somehow I got, you know, 500 cookies. Now I go to hacker.com, and I hit this cookie eviction code on this website. And if you notice the status bar there, it just cycles really quick through a whole bunch of host names. And my browser gets pushed with 3,000 cookies, and I'm automatically logged out of Facebook. And my browser is littered with 3,000 cookies all off whsec.us. So you can actually force somebody to log out of all their websites. You know, I thought it was a public good. at least in Mozilla, Dan is here from Mozilla. I don't know what their status is, but they're gonna have plans to make this hack a little bit harder, so that you can't set. You're gonna have to have 50 different domain names to pull off this hack to do cookie eviction. So it's gonna be the $300 hack. All right. It's an advancement.
Actually,
So
you could flood someone's disk, but you can't clear all the cookies.
So, okay, so just to reiterate what Dan said, they're dropping the global cookie cap, and they'll expire older cookies. So you have to fill up the disk to make this hack work. Well, it'll never work. You just have to fill up the disk.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. Oh, how long would that take, I wonder?
Still a
150 cookies per top level domain. So yeah, okay, yeah. I'll think about that one. That's good. All right. If you're a user, what do you do? you can disable autocomplete in the web browser. Who's done that? you can remove persistent data, you know, history, form data, cookies, local storage. I've been working on my last blog post on my blog is how, trying to figure out different ways to remove the so-called ever cookie from your browser. It's really difficult to do. We haven't got around to IE yet, but we can do it without a browser restart in Chrome and Firefox now. If you're a Firefox user, you can use NoScript or different password managers such as 1Password. If you're a website owner, it's very nice for your users to have these little features called autocomplete equals off for anything that might be considered important to the user. But this is one of my personal gripes is that we have a ton of security features, this being one, that you have to enable. It's opt-in, not opt-out. So this could easily have been, you know, autocomplete equals on and the default was off, but that's not the case. It's also not the case with HTTP only, XML frame options, what else is out there? The secure flag. I mean, we have a cookie flag that says secure. Isn't that like the evil bit in TCP? I've talked to the browser makers ad nauseum about this, but it all stems back from legacy stuff and not wanting to break the web. And I was listening to the keynote earlier today with Michael Howard, and there is a case to be made for secure by default. That's a great design criteria. My question is any browser claiming to be secure by default? Right? Is anybody want to raise their hand and say my browser is, you know, secure, at least as secure as Windows? I don't think so. Right now, the general purpose attacks that we can levy on browsers that are unpatched are intranet hacking. I mean, just describe for you what this is. If you go to a website that I control, I can force your browser to hack your intranet, your DSL router, reconfigure it, your internal printers. It's almost as if firewalls don't exist anymore because the browser serves as the bridge. Intranet hacking does work, and it's not fixed. At least in Internet Explorer, CSS history hacking is not fixed. Clickjacking is not fixed. This is the one where we showed earlier, using earlier versions of Flash, where we could force you to click on a link that you think is a link or something and turn on your camera and microphone so you're all of a sudden your machine is now spying on you in a very real way. Facebook is dealing with this right now hardcore. I mean, clickjacking is a very real, very dangerous problem out there. And I sympathize with the browser makers that this is a very hard problem to solve, but it is not solved. DNS rebinding, not solved. Breaks the same origin policy. The entire basis of web security. Cross-site request forgery, not solved. I can force your browser to make any request I want to any web server in the world at any time. Just put it out there in an ad network and makes this work really great. Not fixed. Cross-site scripting. You guys here have actually made the most ground on cross-site scripting with the XSS filter in the browser, but it's still not perfect and it's not fixed, and all the other browser makers should be racing to catch up, but they are not. So here's the other thing. So I just give these food for thought. I'm not going to rant too hard on the stuff. I've had great conversations ad nauseum with everybody. But some other things that are on my mind. Default in the browser, there's over 100 SSL certificate authorities. These are companies that can sign SSL certificates. Over 100 of them in the modern browser. That's a whole lot of trust to go around. Would you trust AOL to sign your a root cert on any particular website? CNNIC, that's the China ISP pseudo-government kind of thing. They're in your browser too, and they can sign whatever they want. There's major issues there. Form autocomplete, they're on by default. Not off by default, major attack surface there. Third-party cookies, those are on by default. Tracking cookies are on by default in your browser. And as we know, nobody really likes to turn things off because they don't know what it means. I've been surfing without third-party cookies for the last 2 years, and I've never had major web breakage. We don't know why it's on other than maybe competing business interests. Browser data persists across sessions even after you quit. Your history, cookies, downloads, flash cookies, Silverlight isolated storage, session storage, global storage, local storage. Well, maybe not so much session storage, but all these areas are places where data will persist even across a browser close. So again, feature, lack of privacy versus security. Privacy and browser security are heavily intertwined. It's hard to have one without the other. Anyway, so these are the things out there to think about. At least the researchers are thinking about these particular things and the things we whine about ad nauseum. Those are the attacks. Those are the things that rise to the top of our list. And I would love to have more discussions with anybody else that's interested on the browser security teams, average users, what you can do to protect yourself. In the meantime, I am ready to answer questions.